It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacy has the day off, but Matthew Ingram's filling in. Lots to talk about. Google and Apple's plan is about to roll out for contact tracing. A couple of universities say we can reopen in September as long as we lock students in. Is that a good idea? And bye-bye to Shoelace, the Google social network nobody ever heard of. It's all coming up next on Twig. This Week in Google comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 557, recorded Wednesday, April 29th, 2020. Shoelace, it's not a social network. This Week in Google is brought to you by Eero. Blanket your whole home with fast, reliable Wi-Fi. Eero is the Wi-Fi your home deserves. Go to eero.com/twit and enter the code TWIT at checkout to get free overnight shipping with your order. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest from the Googleverse, the Facebookverse, the Twitterverse, with the Craig Newmark, the Craig Newmark guy, the professor, the Craig Newmark professor of entrepreneurial journalism at the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the City University of New York. There's entrepreneurial journalism in there somewhere. Mr. Jeff Jarvis, former TV guy critic.
Hey. Yep.
And college DJ. Hello, Jeff. How's everything?
Failed college DJ.
How's everything in your neck of the New Jersey there?
We're doing all right over here.
Good.
We're doing all right.
Family's
it's going to rain
good.
For the next 3 days.
Family's well. Everybody's feeling good.
We're doing all right now.
Good. And we know Stacy's not here. It's Botox time in the spring. So we brought in Mandy Patinkin, the star of Homeland. It's actually Matthew Ingram, chief digital writer at CJR, the Columbia Journalism Review, cjr.org. Hi, Matthew.
How you doing?
I've been really enjoying your Instagram posts. Or is it Facebook?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, both. Yeah, the lambs.
Now that you're on
lambs.
Facebook, see what benefits there are, Leo.
No, I'm leaving Facebook the minute this is over.
Oh.
But
well, good. We'll see you here for the next 3 years.
I know, but it's kind of replacing social contact for me, and that so there is a value to Facebook.
There's a real value to
it.
Matthew, how do you trim the beard?
It's good looking beard. Man.
I don't.
You're doing well. You don't.
Oh, is it?
It's just you don't trim the beard at all.
I mean, now and then. I mean, a little bit, but I've kind of just been letting it.
Yeah. Looks good. Yeah. It really is. It has that Mandy Patinkin look to it. It's really nice. It's really good.
I'm really debating getting the beard trimmer at the highest and just doing it.
Man, I'm tempted too. My hair is getting so out of control today.
Yeah, you got a real Don Johnson thing going.
Yeah, today. Normally I part it on the left, but you can't part it on the left when it's lengthy because then it's weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, I part it in the middle, which gives it that, you know, Michael Douglas, Don Johnson kind of Sonny Crockett.
Are you going
wave.
For the man bun? Do you want it to be sort of man bun length?
Or? Yeah. It's either that or Professor Irwin Corey. I don't know. Little Stokowski.
Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could be a conductor. Yeah.
So I'm having fun with it. I've always wanted to have long hair, and I never had it, and so I thought it'd be kind of fun. I don't know. I might be man bunning, only in the privacy of my own home, because there seems
getting
to be
enough now.
I think people will throw blood on you if you go out in public with a man bun.
They do make certain assumptions.
Yeah,
about you.
It's
that.
Not a good look. So, but no. Ponytail, I've really always wanted a ponytail. So maybe I'll have a ponytail. Also a bad look, but for, you know.
My parents in the 60s hated long hair. The worst fights we got into my entire childhood, they send me the humiliation. I would leave getting my hair cut. They would send me back to get more cut off.
Nice.
Oh. That's awful.
Oh.
That's, see, is. I didn't have that kind of, your parents were clearly Nixon Republicans.
Yeah, exactly. Goldwater.
Goldwater, even worse.
Yeah.
Or better.
You had to go to a communist professor. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went over to the base. We lived on an Air Force base. And I got number two all over.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's it.
My, when Henry, my son, who's now 25, was like two or three, I took him to a barber who clearly had had worked with recruits on the Army base, because he took out the and I wasn't paying close attention. He took out the, it went zzz. Henry smelled like machine oil at the end of it and had little time. And I brought him home, and Jennifer just burst into tears. It was, what have you done? I'm never letting you take him again.
It worked.
It worked. Yeah, it did. I wasn't, no, I wasn't aiming for that. I was trying to have a manly experience with him as a child.
I did see somebody. I didn't know that they really still sold them. I saw on Instagram this week somebody did have a Flo-Bee and used it.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine that that gives you too good a look.
It's terrible. No, it's garbage.
That's basically a vacuum hose attached to a clipper, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to. I don't know. I mean, I'm craving a haircut. But it might just be that intermediate stage you sometimes get at when you, you know, like with a beard where it's a little itchy. But if I could just push through, I don't know. I don't think pushing through is going to be, is going to do anything for me here. It's like,
yeah,
it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, at least we didn't dye our hair.
Hey, at least we're
old guys.
Yes, there are a number of
three old guys.
Number of women I know who are. Mm-hmm. A little unhappy with events, so to speak. So, Matthew, how are things? You're in Ottawa?
No, actually, I'm just north of Toronto.
Toronto. But you do have baby lambs. I was blown away by how the cute those are.
Yeah. They are amazing.
Man.
We have one. My daughter, youngest daughter is with us, and she's bottle feeding him. And then he cuddles up with her and has a little snooze in her arms.
Cool.
And it's pretty much the cutest thing you've ever seen, probably.
If you follow Matthew on Instagram or Facebook, you will see these amazing pictures of lambykins. They're
just
so cute.
Jumping the thing around. Is people,
when I post them, people I don't even know are like, thank you. Thank you for the lambs. This is getting me through, you know, my day is looking at your lambs.
Yeah.
So it's a public service, really.
No, it is. Because, I thought this, that seeing nature continue normally is a really nice way to kind of remind yourself.
Another way to look at it is if only we weren't here, think how happy they'd all be.
Well, they wouldn't be being bottle fed. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. But one of them would.
Pigs wouldn't be stocking up at the. I got to make a political comment. I can't help myself. So the White House is going to support the Defense Act for bacon, pork. But not for tests.
Yeah. Well, it's more important.
I mean, I get ventilators.
We need bacon. It is a priority.
I understand bacon's a priority, but.
Actually, I feel really bad for the meat workers, many of whom are immigrants who will be forced to work shoulder to shoulder in a very dangerous environment. And of course, because there's unemployment doesn't seem to be working out too well either. They may just have to go and say, look, I'm going to try to survive this. I'm sorry, but I need to do it for my family. And that just breaks my heart. I could live without pork products for a while. It'll be okay. All right. Let's talk about, you know, actually, we. God, my hair is terrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, men aren't vain. No.
That looks good. It's Silver Fox. Look.
Silver Fox. Thank you.
Should go with it.
Do you use anything on it, Leo?
Shampoo?
I use the. No. I never did this, but the Harry's razor has a hair goop.
Oh, yeah. That's good goop.
That's good.
It's
good.
You use that? You use that?
I use it now. Yeah.
I don't like goop because it makes my hair feel like it's greasy.
No, but it feels a little spiky for about an hour, and then it stops feeling spiky.
Okay.
Yeah. This is our version of Vogue, people.
I have beard products now. So.
Yeah,
oh, you do.
When I was gonna grow a beard, I got everything.
A little bit of
yellow wax. Got the little tiny brush. Yeah. Got the beard oil. I got all that stuff. Now I have it. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it. I guess I should keep it in case there's a razor shortage. or something.
Do you ever pull out pictures of yourself from the New Year's Eve and consider?
Oh, no, never going to shave my head again. Lisa would kill me. Kill me. All right, let's talk about Mark Zuckerberg. Okay. According to the Wall Street Journal, he is asserting control of Facebook, pushing aside dissenters. The board of directors basically had not quite 100% turnover, but significant turnover. And he is back, baby. I didn't realize he'd settled back in his armchair, but he's sitting forward right now, leaning in. What does that mean? Is this because of the troubles Facebook had prior to COVID where they were getting... See, I feel like...
I'm betting. This had to take time.
Yeah, because I feel like now... Even I'm on Facebook now. Yeah, nobody's hating on Facebook because it's the only way we know what's going on with our family.
Right.
I mean, realistically, Mark Zuckerberg controlled Facebook before, and he controls it now. He controlled the board before. He controls it now. He controls all the voting shares that matter. He's got proxies for board votes. I'm not sure that this is really going to make a big difference in terms of the actual management of Facebook. I don't know whether he just wanted to move people around, but I don't think
it was an irritation, right, Matthew? I think.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But functionally.
But Peter Thiel's still there, right?
Oh, I don't know. Erskine Bowles is gone. Reed Hastings is gone. These are two board members. Susan Desmond Hellman left last October. She was the lead independent director. Facebook said she was leaving for health and family reasons. This is back last October. Then she went to Pfizer's board, so maybe her health is better. It doesn't seem like, I mean, you're right. He never gave up control, but apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, and it's odd that they're putting this out today. I don't know what happened, but apparently he had relied on Sheryl Sandberg, the operating officer, to handle policy and operational issues. Chris Cox, the chief product officer, longtime friend, to oversee the platform. But starting in 2018, he took on the role of a wartime leader, announced a series of products that took Facebook in new directions, starting with, gosh, has it been now a year since he announced the private encrypted messaging thing? Mm-hmm. Have they done anything in that direction at all? No.
I think they're moving it, like rolling it out. But
you know, it's interesting. There's just for the sake of argument, just to play Leo for a second and be
please
contrary.
Do, because I'm tired of being Leo.
Let me do my
take
hair.
Today, the world of Leo will be
Now I look like Leo. That's the problem. Now I can't look at myself in the camera and know which side I'm pushing down. Okay, anyway. So everybody thought, oh, Mark Zuckerberg, he's just a nasty little crapper, and all the problems are him. What if that wasn't the case? What if he delegated, just for the sake of argument, just to be contrarian, what if actually he delegated too much and he really does have the vision for the place? And it was like Michael Dell, when Dell went downhill, Dell had to come back and say, I'm in charge again, and he fixed the company.
Maybe there are precedents for this, aren't there?
So what if just for the sake of argument, I'm just blowing Matthew, just give me a chance here. Give me a chance here.
Okay.
What if, and I like Chris Cox, and you know, I'm not nothing against people who are delegated to, but not only that, other people in charge of the news feed have changed. I mean, this security just changed. Tons of things just changed. What if young Zuckerberg delegated too much? And what if he does have a vision for the place? And now that it's loved for at least a few months, maybe there is a chance. Go ahead, Matthew. I'm trying.
So I would just disagree with that fundamentally. I don't know Mark Zuckerberg, but everything I've read about him and all the people I've talked to who do know something about him, he doesn't delegate in the traditional sense of the word. So he is intimately involved in all the major decisions that either come from him or managed by him. So I don't see him as being the kind of guy who would say, well, why don't you take over the news feed or the encryption thing and just get back to me and I'll you know, go off and do something else. That's just not the way he operates, as far as I know. So,
New York Times today had a story that they have restructured their security team. In fact, displacing more than 24 employees. The security team's been kind of in a furor since Alex Stamos left over the Cambridge Analytica revelations. That was 2 years
ago. Alex Zoom Fixer Stamos.
Zoom Fixer Stamos. So apparently there was a lot of infighting, according to the Times. So Facebook has dissolved and dispersed its security group over the last 2 years. The latest cuts are part of a change in philosophy on security efforts spurred by infighting and long-running issues within the department. New York Times quoting unnamed sources within Facebook. But it sounds as if, here's the company spokeswoman who gave a statement to the Times, they're going to go automated. To stay ahead of evolving security threats, we're investing more in automated detection. That never goes well. And bringing in new skills as we continue to grow our security team all over. We're growing all over. I am. But that's mostly because I ate too many crumpets. This also means we're restructuring a portion of our team and helping the people affected by this change find other roles at Facebook. So there is a this is I would guess, you know, if this is happening all of a sudden, this is related to the Wall Street Journal's report that Zuck is back.
I think it's a fallout from what happened with Stamos too, though. I know that Facebook has disputed this characterization, but my impression of what happened is that Alex wanted to raise the alarm about what the Russians were doing,
and they wouldn't let him.
That went badly.
Although he got in trouble for raising too much.
You know, on the other hand, remember Stamos' previous job was at Yahoo, where he quit because he said they never told me about this billion record breach, and how can I work somewhere where they don't keep me in the loop? Maybe it's legit. Maybe this poor guy just has jumped from one job, bad job, to another. I don't know. But it's kind of, that's twice now he claims that I don't know anything. I wasn't in the loop.
So the Yahoo thing rings true to me.
Yeah, I think they did do it because Yahoo, remember, Marissa Meyer didn't even tell Verizon during the due diligence prior to Verizon buying Yahoo.
That's right.
Didn't even tell her them.
That's classic.
Verizon was so pissed they said, wait, give us some money back.
That's classic Yahoo.
Yeah. So if they didn't tell Verizon their suitor, then I could see how they might have not told us head of security. And nobody's denied
this. This restructuring is to kind of de-emphasize the power of that position that Stamos used to hold.
Maybe
he had a whole department,
right?
And he was, you know,
yeah, it was all under him. And then he left 2 years ago, and it kind of. It's so funny though that, I mean, COVID's changed so much. Everything, life has changed. It's a new world.
Yep.
We're on a different timeline, but among other things, all the criticisms of Google, Facebook, you know, the tech lash. Who's got time for tech lash?
Right.
In fact, people are now embracing Google and Apple because, in fact, it's going to go on your phones tomorrow, kids. The new API.
Was it tomorrow? Oh,
May 1st.
Wait.
So it's Friday. Yeah. So what's happening?
Even Germany switched and is now in the Google Apple.
Yes. France and Germany both said, look, we have a pan-European program. We want to use that. France was complaining because Apple said, well, no, you can't use this Bluetooth interface if you want to take data off the phone. We won't let you. Germany on Sunday said, okay, we're going to do it your way. We'll use the – and you know what? I like and Steve Gibson's taken long looks at this, so I'm trusting Steve's reading of the white papers.
Forever.
Yeah. And he says they've done the right thing. This is a system that's designed to protect privacy and yet still allow contact tracing.
Now, they made adjustments since we last spoke about this. Did Steve look into those adjustments? And
yes,
I'm curious
the adjustment, he talked again yesterday about it. The adjustments improve it. One thing Google and Apple both said is all the information recorded by these phones will be dumped at the end of this time. This is not going to be something we're going to hand over to your government. That's the great fear, right? The government will use this. Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, private industry will use this API to collect information. But it's designed from the ground up to really kind of not have personally identified information in any of this. It seems like it's going to be something we're going to need. So Australia's designed their own. Terrible.
Uh-huh.
Countries that design their own tend to be much worse from a privacy perspective than this Apple-Google thing. So I suspect this is going to end up winning, especially since it will be on all modern Android and iOS devices. Mm-hmm. The API gets pushed out. Yeah.
South Korea has an app, but I think it's South Korea, but only like 12% of people downloaded
it. South Korea.
And so then you don't get enough data to...
That's Singapore. Singapore, 12% adoption of their contact tracing app. 12% in an authoritarian nation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why.
I mean, that could be part of why.
Ding, ding, ding.
You push too hard. People say,
a little nervous.
Nope. Because I suspect in the U.S., we've been pretty cooperative. I think
we're in agreement. We're not in agreement with the White House, but we're in agreement. The interesting thing was I saw this week. There was a paper from the UK where you see the far right and the far left are both, especially in Europe, are both open up again. It's kind of fascinating.
Well, it does seem like we're moving in that direction. Part of the reason for that is people like Elon Musk.
Yeah.
What was his tweet? Freedom now. part of the reason for that is I think after Free America Now, that was his tweet. Free America Now is just after a while
he
people
wants
just
to
go
get his workers back in the factory too, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, he's living in a mansion. With
well,
Grimes.
It's more than that. He has a there's some timing thing with his stock. Oh. I saw a story about that.
Oh, that's terrible.
To get people back to work.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's... yeah. Well, I should have put it in the...
Musk's Tweet Fest. This is according to the esteemed Toronto Star. Is that esteemed? I was a Globe and Mail guy. Star is not...
I don't know.
You don't know.
I think esteemed might be overselling it.
Musk's Tweet Fest came a day after his plan to reopen Tesla's lone U.S. vehicle assembly plant looked doubtful, with San Francisco Bay Area health authorities looking to extend shelter in place. It has, in fact, been extended here to June 1st. Mm-hmm. Tesla has been eager to reopen after having clashed with the county and the city over whether it was an essential business and could remain open. This doesn't mention anything about his stock holdings.
So
actually, this is from Bloomberg, republished by the Star.
The Bloomberg story.
So, yeah.
I put up on a Forbes thing under other. February raised expectations that Elon Musk would soon hit the first tranche of a jaw-dropping pay package worth at least $55 billion over a decade for hitting performance targets set by Tesla's board. He could qualify for a payout of $435 million as early as late April, although the timing is increasingly clouded by Tesla's share plunge amid coronavirus concerns.
So it's a $435 million tweet.
Maybe. Don't want to be a conspiracy theorist or anything, but...
He's done all right. I think he's just kind of... look, we
maybe
have lots
the FTC
of,
should look into it.
Oh, please. We have a lot of evidence that Elon is off his rocker. Or not. I don't know. Off his rocker is quite right. But my point was... I think there is increasing pressure. People are just getting more and more like, I can't take it. I can't take it anymore. And so all governments, including California, which was very aggressive, are starting to say, well.
But there are layers to this, too, though. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about places where they're saying you have to go back to work. And if you don't, you won't be eligible for anything, including health care. So,
well, that's a problem in this country. Unlike yours, Matthew, most people in the U.S., more than half, get their health insurance from their job.
Right.
And out of work means you have to, you know, most cases you get COBRA, which means you basically have
which costs a fortune.
You have to pay for it. I mean, won't lose your coverage, but you have to pay for it.
Your state says go back to work.
Right.
And you have to go, even at risk to your health.
Right.
Because if you don't, you get nothing.
Right.
Can you just take us over, please?
Canada? I have to say.
Sure, yeah.
I'm pretty impressed with Trudeau. He seems to be doing a nice job. He's a good-looking kid.
Yeah.
Nice beard.
Yeah, no, I think he's done I think he's done a pretty good job.
Facebook is hosting a virtual graduation. Oprah will be your commencement speaker this year.
I was just telling my daughter about that. she was supposed to graduate.
Does that satisfy your daughter's need to walk?
I think she likes the fact that Lil Nas X is going to be in it.
Oh, wow.
Big fan.
Yeah.
And,
Jennifer Garner, Simone Biles, and Awkwafina. Mm-hmm. Joining Oprah Winfrey.
I was trying to find like a Snapchat filter that would make it look like you had a gown and a cap on.
I'm sure they're working on it right now. So that'll be May 15th. I will watch this, 11 a.m. Eastern. It's hashtag graduation 2020. Facebook and Instagram celebrate the class of 2020. And Lil Nas X play Old Town Road because he only has the one.
I'm just imagining that college students are not going to be watching this.
Maybe this is another one of those privileged things, but I never really wanted to go to my high school graduation.
Right.
Did you?
I went to my high school in a horrible red gown.
Yeah.
College, I did not go to. My mother never forgave me for it.
Yeah. College is different. I would have gone to college because that's a lot of work and the family really loves it and stuff. I didn't graduate, so I didn't get
to. I didn't go.
Yeah. I didn't go. I didn't go
because it was the early 70s. So actually, it was a time of being obnoxious.
My parents were out of the country, so I just took a pass.
So, but there are certainly people for whom the high school graduation is a momentous occasion for them and their families. College, even more so. I went to my daughter's college graduation last summer, and it was great. And there were.
Did you hear about the kids who made virtual versions of their universities in Minecraft?
Yeah, so wasn't they that were great?
right down to the square footage and the layout, so that they could have virtual graduation.
I think that's so cool. Japanese students did it. Cal students are doing it right now. Mm-hmm. I think this is such a great idea. And the thing is, this generation grew up with Minecraft.
Open.
Stop. As much as I love Donald Sutherland, I don't really want to watch him do an ad for American Express right now. I guess I don't have a choice. Group of Cal students is constructing the entire University of California campus in Minecraft. See, this I want to see. I can jump ahead.
Lockley University.
There's high schools in New York and other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's not even that. It's a GoDaddy ad. Here we go. Minecraft graduation. Look at that. It's pretty. They've got. Yeah. That's nice. Impressive. Oh, they even built the Cal Bowl. There's this. There's
stadium.
The,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's. Yeah.
Blockley.
University of California, like Blockley. Because these guys, that's what they do, man. I'm watching this generation. Ooh. They're so good at Minecraft builds. And why not create it? Look at that. Looks just like.
Well, and musicians are doing like performances in Fortnite.
Yeah.
Like this is basically Second Life.
Actually, this leads us to Siva Vaidyanathan's tweets, which scared the hell out of me. He's a professor. He's at, where is he, Georgetown? Where is he?
No, University of Virginia.
Virginia, that's right, UVA. Thomas Jefferson's University. He it sounds like he's very worried that if there is no college in the fall, which is still a possibility, that many universities will just go out of business.
Mm-hmm. Especially colleges.
Colleges, state schools, yes or no?
State schools, we're terribly worried about our budget because, our budget comes from Cuomo, and now we all have to love him, and we do.
But he's got other
priorities. But he tends to be very tough on our budget,
Some universities are proposing in the face of this. Here's Purdue's President Daniels saying, what if we have the students come and lock the doors?
Basically, yeah, it's a very controversial letter, but he's arguing that, well, the young people don't really have any risk, and we can, we're in a small town, and so we can, all but build a wall around it, and we got to get back.
But they're not going to stay there. They're not going to stay there.
Of course not. Of course not.
Well, and it's also some question whether young people are so immune.
The stories, two things. One is the stories about blood clotting and strokes are absolutely terrifying. Frightening among younger people.
Mm-hmm.
Two is it has an impact on, we don't know the full impact yet on other organs.
And the CDC said that it's their, one of their theories was that young people are carriers, but don't, may not contract it, but they may be asymptomatic carriers.
The truth is,
so they all go home to their.
We just don't know. There's so much we don't know about this virus.
Young people do get it.
We just don't. You know, they do get it, of course, but maybe they don't get it as bad. But still, we don't know. This is mm-hmm. a novel virus, and it takes years to really exactly. understand the mechanism of these things. And so, I think we assume, oh look, we're amazing. What science can do, it's incredible. We should know everything by now about this virus. We don't. They're just mysteries. No, we don't know.
We don't.
So,
in fact, there's been a couple of really good articles. I think The Atlantic had one just going through all the stuff we don't know.
Right.
We don't know how it kills people, really. Seems to kill people in multiple ways, right. affecting multiple organs, clotting sometimes, lung. Like, we literally, there's more we don't know than there is that we know.
So which is the form of journalism we should have all the time, Matthew.
What right? we don't know.
It should start with what we don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that at CGR, actually.
Really?
How bad journalists are at saying,
I don't know.
I don't know.
Humans
and here's
are bad
what
at
we
that.
Don't know.
Humans
yeah,
are
Yeah, humans
terrible
in
at
particular
that.
Are bad at it. But yeah. at a time like this, it's even more important for the media to say, we don't know. We literally do not know the answer to this question. It's really important. And we can tell you what people are saying about it, but we cannot give you. And I think for a long time, the media tried to seem infallible and right. omniscient. And I think that's backfiring.
Well, the other thing, Matthew, is we're terrible at. Let's do some self-hating journalist moments. Is we don't understand science's process.
Right.
As I'm fond of saying, we take the latest word as the last word. And scientists, now that I'm reading them a hell of a lot, because you'll see they're on my lower third bit.ly/COVID Twitter list. I'm reading 575 of them every day. One of the great skills of a scientist and an academic is, what more research do we need? What don't we know? And we don't say mm-hmm. that in journals. That's below our ego threshold.
I remember Dan Gilmore, I think it was, or mm-hmm. saying that, you know, every good story about something complex should have a giant box, you know, that says, here's what we don't know. And yep. but so few places do that. It's sad.
And it makes sense in breaking news, we should be doing that, right? Mm-hmm. No, we don't know the motive of the shooter. No, we don't know any are dead, blah, 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 blah. And in science news. Yeah. There was a case, I wrote about this last week. I think I talked about it briefly, but there was a New York Times story that just quoted the author of a controversial paper, the Santa Clara paper, and quoted no one else. And we need some very simple, basic standards that when you have a preprint paper, you need to go to people other than the author. We don't do that.
Yeah, I think the preprint thing has really, you know, people see it and they're like, oh, yeah, it's a scientific paper. And the guy who wrote it is like a scientist and has letters yeah. after his name. And so we should just write whatever it says in there.
Right. And but the preprints, you know, I've written about this. The scientists I've talked to about this are really grateful for the preprints. It's changed their world immensely.
But they know how to vet it.
They know how to deal with right. it, but they also do it. So in the case of that New York Times story, if the Times had merely searched Twitter, they would have found five epidemiologists mm-hmm. who attacked that paper. And they didn't include it. They didn't go to the effort. The scientists are out there doing peer review at the speed of the internet now using Twitter. It's amazing. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, that is part of, I think, what we're struggling with is that science is happening in real time now in a way that it yep. didn't used to.
So this is the president of Brown University, Christina Paxson, in the New York Times today. College campuses must reopen in the fall. And she's also proposing the same thing. Brown has a fence all the way around it. I guess you could lock the fence. My mom is nearby in Cranston. I would hate for her to have health problems because we got 5,000 kids in dorms.
Exactly. Exactly.
From all over the country.
Well,
Siva
tweeted too. He said, nobody goes to Brown. You know, it's tiny. Most students, they're in junior colleges, they're in state universities, they're not living in dorms, they're not going to dining halls, they're not in a closed and controlled environment.
Right. So what's wrong with Zoom? What's wrong with online education? I thought this might be the beginning of a new wave in education. It's not as
good.
It
works. No, I think it works really well.
You're doing it right.
I'm taught in Zoom. You know, I'm teaching older students. I also taught. I did a class at an undergrad class, like 40 students. And funny, undergrads are just different. They were twitchy and twitchy because I was boring. Mm-hmm. But I'm teaching graduate students, and it works pretty damn well. And the problem is that there's certain things you want to do in person, but there's a lot you could do. I mean, it really should change. I've been thinking for a long time that we should be changing how we use classroom time. We shouldn't be teaching skills in classroom. We should be teaching them outside the classroom and doing other things while we're in. It's an opportunity to learn new ways. But my feel, even in a place where I am, where we change a lot, universities don't change.
No. I've had long conversations with my father, as we were talking about before the show, who's a longtime college professor, now retired. And he, this is well before COVID, this is 10 years ago, he talked a little bit about how the original idea of universities, going back to Cambridge and Oxford, was scholars gathering for a colloquia. It wasn't about students sitting in a lecture as a professor taught them. It wasn't like a high school is with a teacher and students. It was more collegial. That's where that word comes from. It was a colloquium of scholars on a topic, kind of more something more a little Talmudic, more like, you know, the kind of rabbinical studies, just, you know, talking about the Talmud. And he thought that actually that was a really that's how the in-person part of a university should be. And the rest, the lecture stuff, all of that stuff, he thought could be online. It doesn't need it doesn't need to be in person, but there is an in person component, but it's not the teaching part. In fact, that's actually a philosophy in high schools. In fact, education all over the world right now, they call it flipping, where instead of going to school to get the lecture and then going home and struggling alone with your homework, you flip it. The lectures are at home at night. And where you go to school is to work to collaborate with your peers under the auspices of a teacher to understand the material, to do the homework. Do the homework at school and do the lectures at home.
I was up for a deanship somewhere some time ago. Didn't take it. I decided to stay where I am wasn't offered it either. I backed out. But as I was brainstorming with myself how to think about this, it's a little trite what I'm about to say, but not for the first time. But what you need is a genius bar, right? You need the ability for students who are trying to learn, who get in trouble, can go to somewhere, go to people and say, help me with this. And that they're self-directed and they know what the goal is. And they want to get to that goal and outcome and they learn how best they can get there. And then you help them, you provide services for them to do that. But that doesn't mean spending 45 hours in a classroom all together, all at the same time, at different speeds, learning the same thing.
So instead of saying, as these two university presidents are, oh, let's just figure out a way to keep doing what we've been doing all along, maybe there's financial constraints. It's certainly, universities lose money. It's certainly very expensive. Even these elite private schools lose money. But maybe we can rethink what education is at this point. My son has been online in high school. His whole high school experience. He's a senior. He'll graduate in December because he's so much he's accelerated because of his online experience. And he loves it. He's very happy with it. In fact, you're talking about going to the regular school for his senior year so he could be with his friends and socialize and stuff, because that's all senior years anyway. And he said, yeah, but they're going to want me to do debate and I don't want to do any public speaking. He's happier. And frankly, in the online school, he's really found a way. And I listen and he's talking. There's other students talking. There's communication. This is a generation that's grown up. When he plays video games, his friends go home to play video games with him. They're all online. Mm-hmm. They can't play next to each other. Mm-hmm. They have to go home to their computer. And then they're all on Discord and they're talking. And that's his social life. And that's what he grew up with. Now, I don't want to judge it. It's not what my social life looked like. But it seems to work for him. So I don't know.
So what choices if he goes to college?
He's going to have to go to the regular JC. I don't think there's any online.
That's what I'm at. Maybe now. There are going to be more options that aren't, because that was one of the great Instagram accounts. You're all just going to online school now. Don't make fun of what's it called? Not Pacific. Well, Pacific's
University
one of
the ones of Pacific. One. Yeah.
University of Pacific, right? Brown, you're online. Harvard, you're online.
Just like everybody else.
You're online, right?
But it's a great equalizer. Honestly, do you even need to go to a university nowadays? We got to find a way to make it financially worthwhile, but you can take courses from Stanford, MIT, Harvard.
Yeah.
Harvard's incredible computer science course, CS50, is free online, and it's awesome. It's really great. In fact, I'm trying to encourage these high schoolers to take a freshman year course from Harvard because it's the best computer science course out there. And any kid anywhere without the means, we do have to figure out how that makes that work. But I mean, Harvard honestly loses money on every student. They survive through the endowment of the alumni. So maybe there's some way of making that work. I don't know. It's a different model. Harvard's very, very expensive. But most students, by the way. And I apologize. I swore at Harvard 2 weeks ago because I followed the news instead of reading the real story. Harvard got $8 million, and I thought it was from the stimulus relief package. Mm-hmm. It was actually a package intended for higher education to go to students because most of Harvard students are on scholarship because it's so damn expensive. And it was to support those students, and it was completely reasonable for Harvard to do that.
Students, it's a lot of money. In the case of CUNY, because CUNY is a city university, and we unlike Columbia, where Matthew is, we serve the people. So the money that came was tied to students with Pell Grants, which did us as a graduate school no good. But CCNY, you're on Pell Grants to be there, then it was the same intent.
I think so. The money Harvard took, completely appropriate. I apologize, Harvard. I still hate you, but only at football.
For different reasons.
Only in football. Many different reasons. No, I don't hate Harvard. Our best producer is a Harvard man, as I constantly say.
So I think, can we talk about Google requiring all advertisers to identify themselves?
Yeah, I think that's good, don't you?
Big deal. I think it's a wonderful thing. We were getting to the point of the Honest Ads Act of just trying to get them to do it in political advertising. Facebook was doing that for political advertising. Now to set the standard up to say all advertisers ought to be transparent, I think it's wonderful. Is there any downside here?
No, and I'll give you the...
Should have done it a long time ago.
I'll give you the technological reason to celebrate this. One of the biggest security problems right now is these automated ad systems, Google, Facebook, everybody. Mm-hmm. You don't have to show up. You just can buy an ad, provide the ad collateral, which can contain malware. And it's happened. Many very prestigious sites have served up malware because these ads are completely automated. They're purchased automatically. Nobody reviews them. They go up on the page, and boom, you got malware. So I think it's very valuable and very important. I don't know why they haven't done this before. You should be able to, you're buying an ad. We should know who bought the ad.
It's an expense because they're going to have to go. This is going to take years, they said, to get all around the world. It's going to start in the U.S.
Yeah.
But it occurs to me that there's a value in verification space. Right. So now the advantage is that an advertiser says, if I advertise on Google, you can find me. You know who I am.
Yeah. Those ads are better ads. Yeah.
When I did my COVID Twitter list, I think I mentioned this before. Twitter came to me and said, can you help get some of these scientists verified? And so I contacted a lot of them, who I thought was very good and did some other perception. Yeah, I wasn't paid
the blue check mark.
Just the blue check, or the blue stethoscope. And so there's a verification, right? And the scientists were incredibly grateful for being verified on Twitter. It meant something because they are used to credentials.
Right.
And I think it's fascinating to imagine kind of we used to talk about namespace on the internet. What about a verification space?
Well, there are lots of reasons for that. There's also some fear about that because there is some need for anonymity for some people. Whistleblowers, abuse spouses.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. It shouldn't be. Not everybody should be verified.
Right. I think advertisers should.
It's not a requirement.
I think advertisers
should.
But
for certain tasks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the from the Google ad blog. This is what it would look like. You would hover over the advertiser's URL, and there'd be an about this advertiser. And it would show their name, their location. And by the way, there's a little switch that says, I don't want to see any more ads from this advertiser, which is interesting. So I think this is absolutely a great thing. I think it will make it a safer space. You know, you can't buy an ad on Twit. We do more than verify. I mean, we get to know you. You can't anybody who's advertising, and none of our ads can possibly hurt you because they're just audio. But lots of websites are running ads with flash in them and all sorts of stuff in them that's potentially very dangerous. So I think this is a great idea. I hope Google makes not only makes this a, you know, a standard for all of the Google ads, but sets the standard that other companies have to adhere to.
I wonder if this is going to lead to any, you know, a drop in just ad buys.
Why would it?
I know Google's, well, because people might not want to do it, I guess. If it's
I think Matthew has got, yeah, but they're probably bad ads. They're probably ads that also cost them effort for policing and stuff, right? So,
I'm just thinking, I was looking at the item about Google worried that it's, you know, ad business is going to slow down as a result of COVID. And
right.
So the two of those things together might.
It's a tough thing to do. Actually, Google's results were good this quarter, but they did, what did they say, 30%?
They're not going to be good next quarter.
Ad sales loss. Yeah. Microsoft's results are coming out right now. A number of companies, Spotify. Go ahead.
I have a friend who works in the ad industry, works for a large ad network that I won't name. And he said they've been seeing 30 to 40% drops across the board worldwide.
Oh, I don't know. But I think it's, I think the market might have worked this in. Google stock to close today up 8.74%, $107.
Yeah. Yeah, the stock market loves it, although the stock market's looking for any ray of sunlight at this point. I think they don't.
Yeah.
And the stock market has a very short attention span.
That's right.
I wouldn't look for quite some time.
I got rid of almost all my stock because I just I'm too old to be sitting on this ride for much longer. So I locked in those losses. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Lock them in. EFF talking about, by the way, the Apple Google API is now out in beta. And I think in the next couple of days, you're going to get an Apple update on your iOS devices and an Android update on your Android devices.
And it will go in no matter what, right? You don't have to use it, but it'll be there.
It doesn't do anything until somebody writes an app to use it. And that you do not have to download.
I got a question. What if you have a Huawei phone?
Same thing.
Just what if asking for a friend, huh, Matthew?
Oh, that's interesting. Because you don't have the Google stuff on there. Like, and as I remember, I'm trying to remember.
No, I do.
It's an older Huawei phone.
Because I'm sort of grandfather.
Oh, all right. Yeah, if you have Google services on there, you'll get it. I think I remember that that's how Google's pushing out this update is through the Google services, basically the Google the Google Store API. If you are on a Huawei phone that's de-Googled, I don't think you will get it.
Yeah, I wonder.
I bet you wouldn't.
You get a special Chinese version.
Yeah.
So then the Chinese government can track you.
Yeah. So I would read, if you're concerned about the privacy, I would read the EFF's complaints. I don't think their complaints are specific. In other words, nobody really knows how effective
these
apps
will
be. They're cautious. Most people, is it appropriate to consider a cell phone to equal one cell phone, one person? That appropriate? And so things like that. But I don't think they've found any really big problems here. And I think Google and Apple have been very open to any criticism that have responded.
I mean, in a way, I think it was Pinboard. I don't want to try and pronounce his actual name, but
Maciej Czaglowski.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
That's exactly how I would have said it. he said that he didn't. He said, you know, all this, they're doing all this already. Like, you've already agreed to all the things that they're
marketing.
effectively going to be doing. Yeah. They're just using it to.
In fact, this is more private than ad beacons, which have been on your phone for years.
Yeah.
And I think this is a sensible plan, and it's, you know, this is the right way to go forward. We need to.
And it does not. Like, we've had this argument before, but just to be clear, everybody in my feed is saying it will not replace the contract tracers. We need the contract tracers.
Humans.
That work is necessary. Yeah. Human contact. Mm. But it's going to be helpful. Yeah. And if it reduces the ping pong balls that are bouncing off of each other to a certain rate, it helps.
Right. Yeah. You want to get the contagion rate, the R naught, down below one. Which it is in many areas. It probably is here just because we've all been sheltering in place. But the minute everybody goes out, it goes whoop, right back.
Can you explain something to me, Leo?
Yeah.
R not R zero. Why? What does that stand for, actually? Do you have any idea?
I'm suspecting reproductive rate. But what it means is the number of people who will be infected by any given person. So if it's less than one, it means that the virus isn't spreading. If it's more than one, it means it's spreading. And the larger the number, the faster the spread. I think the last time I saw, I don't know, it's 2.5 for COVID-19. So every one person will, on average, affect 2.5 other people. That's a geometric progression. It's a very high rate if it's not controlled somehow. Measles is like 12. Measles is very contagious. Yeah. So,
but we don't really know what the actual R naught is.
We don't know anything. Yeah. And you know, Lisa said, oh, good news. You just saw it on the TV news.
Remsevier?
No. Quest Diagnostics is opening a lab down the street. We can go get antibody tests. $120. So I said, good, you get it. We don't need to both get it. If you have the antibodies, then I probably do. And if you don't, then I probably don't. So go ahead and get it.
But know that the antibody, there's not a, I think there is maybe one approved test.
No. And it's kind of meaningless. So it's a blood draw, which is one of the better tests. You know, there's a lot of tests which are a drop.
But it's not clear what the antibodies even
What does it even mean?
Are
you contagious? Not.
Not even be immune. Right.
What if it says, yeah, hey, good news, you had it. Does she then say, good, I can go walk around? No, because we don't know.
No.
Or the next day. That's the thing. So you start, you're going to test teachers in school, or you're going to test, vice presidents.
Oh, my God.
2 days after you get the test, there's no reason you can't have become infected and cannot become a spreader.
That's true. But no, that's why the antibody tests are useful, because in theory, if it's like the flu, for instance, where having the flu gives you some immunity for about a year, then once you have the antibodies, you can say, okay, I'm good.
But the WHO is making sure that they don't have the evidence yet to know.
They don't want any golden tickets handed out.
And the updated R naught is 5.7.
Five? Wow.
Yeah.
Seven. Bad.
That's the is it the numerator or the denominator? I was kind of confused. But we don't have enough tests overall.
Yeah.
Right.
Iceland is the only nearly universal enough test, and that's a small population in a controlled world.
So just like Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, apparently, according to Business Insider, is back in the saddle after years of solely focusing on high impact products like Alexa. Amazon told, actually, this is a New York Times article, that Bezos told the New York Times, Bezos has turned back to the here and now problems facing Amazon. And I just want to say, I have turned back to the here and now problems facing Twit. I am taking the wheel back at Twit. I just want
everybody
to know that.
Get out there and sell some damned ads, will you?
Now, that's a haircut I could live with. Jeff Bezos, who's got excellent eyebrows, though. Excellent eyebrows.
You think they're dyed?
He has a whole team of people just for the eyebrows.
I don't know. You know, I don't know anything about Jeff Bezos. No one does. So he's over his divorce. He's settling down. He's going to pay attention. That good or bad for Amazon? If I were an Amazon stock...
Good.
Holder, I'd say yes, right? We want Mr. B in charge.
They've just got to treat the employees better. It's gonna backfire.
Yeah, when you're the optics are very bad when you're the richest man in the world.
Mm-hmm. Not even that. When your company is growing like crazy and is vital.
Yeah.
You know, every company says, "Oh, our most valuable asset is our employees." We'll mean it.
Benedict Evans says, "Oh, calm down."
Well, that's in relation to the story above.
So that's his MO, actually.
That's Karsten and me having a dialogue in the
I have to go back then to see Amazon scooped up data from its own sellers, Wall Street Journal, to launch competing products. How dare they?
No!
How dare they?
So Benedict points out this happens in retail and has been happening.
Sure.
Forever. Amazon didn't invent it.
Benedict
grocery
even,
stores see what sells, and then they make their own brand of it. It's always been there.
Yeah.
Clearly, Benedict's in a fact, Jeff Jarvis fan because his headline is "Moral Panic."
Ah.
And then the quote, up here, well done, you've big, just discovered retail.
There's a big Benedict's retailer, college. Grocery store company that sells what they call no frills, which are no-name products.
We have generics
here. They basically
here.
Take whatever people like, and then they just make a no-name version.
Often it's the same product.
Mm-hmm.
We have that,
too. Yeah, Pete Buttigieg did some consulting for them.
Oh, really? Ooh. He was kind of the no-name presidential candidate. He was kind of the generic.
No frills, anyway.
No frills presidential candidate. Let's see. Let's take a break. And we have a change log to do. I will allow you gentlemen to pick some stories. I don't want to be the only arbiter of the news here.
I think I see one that was put in here to irritate me. Then I'm paranoid.
It's all about Jeff
Jarvis. Karsten is cackling evilly on his deck, eating his Taco Bell.
Yeah, I could see Karsten doing exactly that. You know, he is a Harvard man. Our show today brought to you by Eero. Love my Eero. Love my Eero. We're all at home now, and your home internet suddenly is looming large, isn't it, in your success? Wi-Fi used to be great when we only had a few devices, but now that we've got dozens of IoT devices, we've got neighbors with super powerful routers, suddenly Wi-Fi has been less reliable. Well, now you can set up the most reliable Wi-Fi you've ever had, the Eero Mesh System. You could start at $79. That's a really great starting price, and then build it as you need it. Eero is a mesh system. That means it blankets your whole home with fast, reliable Wi-Fi, eliminating poor coverage, no dead spots, no buffering. You have a signal everywhere. The best way to think of it is Wi-Fi is like the light from a lamp. You can't turn on a lamp next to your router and expect the light to shed all the way through your house. What you need is your Eero base station and Eero beacons to spread the light through your home. Eero sets up in minutes, plugs right into your modem or your modem router. It has a great app. You can manage your Eero. I have an Eero at home, and Mom has an Eero. I manage her network from here. If there's ever a problem, I can look right and see what's going on. The app does all sorts of wonderful things. It lets you pause the Wi-Fi for dinner, gives you alerts if any device joins your network. I always know when people come into my house because I see them joining the network. And it just makes a huge improvement. I hate that noise that I hear or used to hear. Here's the Eero app. From time to time, when my wife would say, "The Wi-Fi's down again." It's exactly what she sounded like. "The Wi-Fi's down again, Laporte." Not anymore. Not with Eero. In fact, Lisa's working in her office. Michael's doing his homeschooling online with Eero. I've got servers running in my office, all on Eero. Here's my download speeds. But I can also, so there's a look at all the activity, including security scans. This week alone, 225,063 security scans. We don't want malware. When you're at home, threat blocks, 188 threats have been blocked. Monday was a bad day for threats. Oh, we were all home, that's why. I'm not home on Tuesday and Wednesday. Look how much better that looks. It must be me. I must be doing it. This is Eero Plus, which I really love. Ad blocking, yes. 3,861 ads. And content filters, both of them through our son. I can look and see what he was trying to see. So he's got devices that are assigned to him, which I can pause. In fact, I do pause at 10 o'clock at night. No more gaming. Eero just gives you total control. And as I mentioned, I can see other networks. So I could switch from my network at home to my mom's network. She's in Rhode Island. And I could see what's going on with mom's network. I could see what her... This used to make me happy. I would check her internet speed, and it was really slow. She's on fiber now. 616 megabits down, 421 megabits up. I could see how many security scans, how many threats blocked, how many ads are blocked. I love Eero. Eero is Wi-Fi you deserve. It fixes all your Wi-Fi issues. And you can get it fixed as soon as tomorrow for as little as $79. Get started with Eero right now. Go to Eero.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT. You'll get free overnight shipping at checkout. Eero.com/twit. And don't forget to use that code TWIT at checkout to get your overnight shipping. Stop suffering with bad Wi-Fi. Now that we're all home, we're banging on the Wi-Fi. We watch a ton of streaming. We were watching Ozark on Netflix last night. Michael was playing games in his room. It's flawless. Eero.com/twit. Offer code TWIT. Thank you, Eero, for making Wi-Fi live up to its promise. All right, do your stories, and then we'll do the Google changelog. I want to give Jeff time to get his finger on the drums. Jeff, what was the story? You, Jeff Jarvis. What was this? There's two Jeffs. Now it's confusing. Jeff Jarvis.
Well, somebody put one in there.
Professor Jarvis. Yes.
Suggesting from the Yale Law Journal, one of the most ridiculous things I've ever read.
Oh, I put this in here. I put this in here. I thought this was very provocative.
Ugh.
The obsolescence of advertising in the information age. According to, this guy, I'm sorry, he's an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky College of Law. Okay. And then there are other people involved.
You can take the student out of Yale, but you can't take the Yale out of the student.
I'm sorry. This might be in the Yale Law Review, but it is not. So the idea, I love this. I thought this was very provocative, and I would love to know what you guys think of this. Here's the abstract. The vast amount of product information available to consumers through online search, right? We know everything. Renders most obsolete advertising obsolete as a tool for conveying product information. Advertising remains useful to firms only as a tool for persuading consumers to purchase products. In fact, in the mid-20th century, courts applying the antitrust laws held such persuasive advertising is anti-competitive and harmful to consumers. The FTC didn't do anything about it because back then, before the internet, they didn't want to deprive consumers of the information value in advertising. But he says now that advertising doesn't have to give us information anymore, thanks to the internet, the FTC should renew its campaign against persuasive advertising by treating all advertising beyond the minimum required to ensure the product information is available to online searchers as monopolization, a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act.
That doesn't sound
the legal right. Argument is here is stretched like saltwater taffy on a hot day.
Well, let's go through the points one by one. First of all, isn't it the case? In fact, this was the hope. I remember the Clutrain manifesto. Doc Searles saying, you know, information's perfect now. Markets are a conversation, and thanks to the internet, if you want to know more about Eero, the ad we just did, you could find out everything. I don't need to tell you anything about it. You can find out everything you need to know. All you need to know is that it exists. And you can find that out with a search. Just search for mesh internet.
What is antitrust about that? So what the later argues in the paper... Yeah.
We'll get there. So I just want to know, do you stipulate that that's the case? That information is now relatively perfect?
The way I put it is advertising is failure. If your product isn't evident, if your other customers haven't recommended it to you, if you don't know about it, then everything else you want, first off and foremost, because it's all free, fails. And that's why you advertise. So advertising
is a mark
of failure.
Is there anything wrong? And again, we're not getting to the interest yet. We'll get there. And I agree with you. But anyway, is there anything wrong with persuasive advertising? You know, advertising for years, you know, you put the bottle of Scope on your colleague's chair because you don't want to tell him he's got bad breath. Advertising for years was all about 4 out of 5 doctors recommend a hearty breakfast or smoke Kent's because there's not a cough in a pack. Advertising for years is just about not information, but persuasion. The hidden persuaders. Do you think that that's problematic?
Matthew?
No.
That's okay.
No. I mean, and I don't understand how the fact that you run persuasive advertising can be an antitrust.
Well,
issue.
I'm going to allow you. But I just want to go
to
the points.
Yeah.
No, I'm not stretching it out. I think those are both good points. I think persuasive advertising is manipulative.
Agreed.
And I think I've always said, and we try to do
so
our
ads. So is teaching. So is religion.
Manipulative in the sense that, you know, going back to Edgar Bernay trying to use his Uncle Sigmund's philosophies of the unconscious mind to persuade you, you know, that you need this product. I think that's manipulative. I think information is important. All of the ads we do, in every case, the ads we do, we don't try to manipulate you. We just tell you, here's a product, here's how it works, here's why we think it's a good idea. I think that's okay.
But you could argue that you saying you like it and how much you like it is designed to be manipulative. Persuasive.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we trust you. We love you.
Okay, that's a point. Now that's somewhat manipulative. Okay. So there's some level of persuasion maybe that's okay. I mean, honestly,
and actually Jeff makes a good point. All human behavior is manipulative.
Love is manipulation.
In my mind, the best advertising they've always said is word of mouth. In my mind, what we are doing is word of mouth advertising.
Yes, right.
It's as if I'm your neighbor over the fence saying, hey, this worked great for me. You ought to try it. And we try to make that be honest. So if it's persuasive, the same way love is persuasive. It's not a bad kind of persuasion. But some ads are manipulative. So maybe we shouldn't say persuasive, but manipulative.
And if the manipulation gets to the point where it's untruthful, then clearly that's something, you know,
that's
that laws.
The problem
have
there is
to say
the
about.
is a lie, not the manipulation, right, Matthew?
Right.
Courts applying, this is the line that we should probably debate. Courts applying antitrust laws held that such persuasive advertising is anti-competitive and harmful to consumers. I'd love to see those cases and see what the issues really are.
So it argued that it basically keeps out competitors because you've persuaded someone this is wonderful so no one else can enter in. That's what makes it antitrust, which makes no sense.
But I do have to say that for a long time, a lot of people felt that in the age of the internet, advertising is less useful and necessary, certainly less useful. And maybe that's why there's a backlash against advertising. There's a lot of ad blocking going on, a lot of ad skipping going on. I don't need to hear this.
Lot of terrible advertising.
Well, that's true, too. In fact, the only ads we don't skip are the most manipulative ones, right? They'll get you crying a tear. Google's really good at those manipulative ads where you're crying a tear. That's manipulative. I don't know. I don't think the premise of this is completely far off. Admittedly, it's shooting me in the foot to say that because that's the only way I make a living is through advertising.
But how is it antitrust?
I'm not buying the antitrust. That's the part I'm not buying.
So, yeah, I mean, it would come down to that whether the courts have said you can't do persuasive ads. And maybe it's not antitrust, but whatever. So really the title of this is The Obsolescence of Advertising in the Information Age. Would you agree to that? Is advertising obsolete?
I think advertising as it was, attention-based advertising, is obsolete, not trusted. Yes.
What if you have a product that is indistinguishable from another product? For instance, Coca-Cola versus Pepsi.
Oh, no, sir. There's a difference. Now, I may be by cola, there is a difference. All right,
let me think of a commodity then. I don't know. Farmer's John bacon versus Westfield ham bacon. I don't know. There are commodity products out there, and the only distinguishing feature is there is none. So my pork bellies are better than your pork bellies because my
gasoline.
Gasoline's a good one. With Tecraline, it's got detergent action.
Tiger in your tank.
That's persuasive because there is no difference.
But
don't those companies, doesn't Esso need those ads? Well, that was the tiger in your
Leo.
Tank.
I know, Uncle Leo.
Doesn't Esso need to do that? Otherwise, Shell will eat their lunch.
The first reference this guy has to something that supports his claim about marketing and advertising and antitrust is from a case from the 50s.
Yeah.
1956. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe...
It was moral panic in its day that advertising... This was the whole Vince Packard?
Mm-hmm.
Vance Pickard? The hidden persuaders,
Hidden persuaders, yeah.
Yeah.
Subliminal advertising, which all of this moral panic stuff treats everybody but you as sheeple.
As a child.
Right? Everybody is vulnerable to this horrible force, but not me. I'm okay.
Argument as well. You can't distinguish news story, so I have to choose for you.
Right. Right.
I mean, some people cannot. Let's be real.
I think it's pretty clear.
I had a conversation with someone nearby who believes that 5G caused COVID.
What? And, really?
The government is trying to, and chemtrails, like you name it, all the hotspots, keywords.
There are some soft-brained
people. Some are just lost.
Let me describe just a part of this conversation. So he mentioned someone else, David Icky or whatever his name is, this lunatic former footballer who has written books and been on TV espousing conspiracy theories, who literally believes that some people are lizards. And so I mentioned that this man's clearly mentally ill. And this guy said, okay, so the lizard thing is a little weird, but he does make some good points.
The alien reptilian legacy. They were aliens.
So I was on a thing today, which is very good, which is going on still today and tomorrow, and it's called Reset Everything at resetEverything.events. Guy put together 24 hours of programming. I did a thing about media. There were things from doctors, other things.
Oh, I like it.
Really pretty interesting. But there was a panel discussion, and professor I know was on it, and I recommended that she be on it, and there were some others. And then a guy who's all involved in crypto tried to argue to me against expertise.
Aye. Ah.
Aye. Now, what do you say? I can't. I just,
What does he have against expertise?
Well, it's basically anti-institutional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's where we are today. And that's why people aren't trusting science, and they don't trust news, and they don't trust educators, and they don't trust professors, and they don't trust the government, and so they want to tear it down. And that's where we are.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Yeah, the institutions haven't been great, and they deserve to be slapped around, and they need to adapt, but without them entirely.
Actually, the title of your 6:30 a.m. talk, my time.
Your time.
Was In the Crisis, Journalism Must Amplify Expertise. In the Aftermath, We Must Rebuild from the Ashes. Good titles. Good titles. You're good at titles.
So this was a good, I think he might have edited it. But this is a guy named Sebastian Couture, Canadian. He said is it much nicer than I do. Put together, it's pretty nice. It's still going on right now.
I just hope if we hit the reset button that everything is not in Courier font in the future. Better than Comic Sans, I guess.
You know, though, I was talking to somebody about the sort of distrust of expertise and institutions, and I was saying, in a way, I mean,
that's what
journalists are trained to be skeptical.
Right.
Of things, right? To question what the government says or to question what experts say. And that's a good thing. But it almost seems like people take it to extremes.
So we're going to question expertise, but trust expertise, and we're not going to get rid of advertising. Has that been settled? We're
good. But we'd like to have haircuts.
But we do desperately need haircuts.
Okay. And some eyebrow tweaking.
Was there any story before we get to the changelog, Matthew, that you want us to cover?
I did. Well, I haven't actually looked into it that much, but I was looking at Facebook's new sort of chatbot, I guess, an open source chatbot, Blender.
There's been, remember Microsoft Tay, the racist chatbot?
Was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Turned racist in about 8 hours.
Yeah, because people will game anything they can. So this is Blender. Mm-hmm. It's a open domain chatbot, outperforms others in terms of engagement, also feels more human. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah, so, speaking of moral panic.
Tay was pretty human.
Yeah. So I don't know where we can try this. They've released the code as a combination of years of research. We've announced we've built an open sourced Blender, the largest open domain chatbot. Well, let me see if I can get where it says we built. No, see, here's a Cornell scholarly article on recipes for building an open domain chatbot. So I don't know if anybody's done it yet. Here's video.
I just think it's interesting. Yeah.
Hi, how are you today? I'm good. How are you? Do you have a favorite food? Mine is lobster. Doing well. My favorite food is cake. I just bought one because I got promoted at work. Congratulations on the promotion. What kind? I don't know who the bot is, actually. I think I'm doing the bot right. Congratulations on the promotion. What kind of work do you do? I work in software. Oh, thanks so much. I just want to make my parents proud. I'm an engineer. I'm sure they will be very proud of you. What type of engineering do you work in? I am an environmental engineer. What's it like to work in software? It can be a lot of work, but it is very rewarding. Do you enjoy your job? I love it. It's very important to protect the environment. That's great. Do you have any hobbies? I like to play tennis in my spare time. I have to say, Blender is on the spectrum. Yeah. I'm not very coordinated, so I don't play sports. I do like to play the guitar, though. That's awesome. I've always wanted to learn how to play an instrument. What kind of music do you play? Mostly alternative rock. That's cool. I like alternative rock as well. What are some of your favorite bands? I like Modest Mouse and the Smashing Pumpkins.
I saw them in concert.
I love the Smashing Pumpkins. I saw them in concert a few years ago. What's your favorite Smashing Pumpkins song? Mine is Today. Today is a great song. Bye. No. My favorite song of theirs is Searching. Geek USA.
Working.
That's an amazing track, too. You have great taste. Well, I'm so glad we had this conversation.
Mm, yeah. The human being didn't sound that human either.
No, they both were awful.
One of them sounded particularly
human. I don't want to have this conversation.
Did you see, I'm trying to remember who did it. They got two chatbots to talk to each other. Yeah. Did you see that?
They had like an Amazon Echo and a Google Voice or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Going back and forth.
And at one point, one of them said that they loved them, the other one. It got weird quite quickly.
It got weird. Kind of the story of this whole show.
Yeah.
It got weird. So I don't know where I can play with Blender. I wouldn't mind. But, you know, God, is it any better than Eliza was 100 years ago? I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Do we even care?
One of the things I find interesting about it is how hard it is. Like, it's not just
humans
computer
are complicated.
Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard because human beings are hard.
Well, and we have a very highly developed sense of detecting off humans so that we can either run away as fast as possible or slay them. So I think that actually this is why it's so challenging, is more than even making something that sounds human is fooling this biologically highly evolved sense that we have for what is normal and what is not.
I could see, you know, especially for people who find it difficult to talk to other human beings about whatever their problems might be, if we could get them working.
Yeah. It did seem they obviously clearly were aiming at empathy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Reflection and empathy. Yep. So maybe they are trying to make a Blender psychiatrist. All right. I think we can play the drums now. Jeff, he is a drummer after all. It's time for
the Google Changelog.
Oh, man. Right on the money. Boom. Google Meet video conferencing. The stuff that the enterprise paid so much for, now free for all. All you need is a Gmail account or a Google account, obviously threatened by the incredible growth of Zoom. Unfortunately, you do have to have a Google account to participate. You can create free meetings of up to 100 people can last any amount of time, although after September 30th, restrictions may return. But you can't just join the meeting by clicking a link as you can with Zoom. You'll have to be logged into your Google account. I think a lot of people are logged in. And Google says we do this so that there won't be any Zoom bombing. This is that thing where you have to prove
you are
who you
say you are. Well, I saw it today for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was in the Reset Everything, and it was just in the comments.
Yeah.
And somebody came in, and they what motivates someone? They put in the N-word like 200 times before somebody could just block the account.
Like, what do you get?
What was the purpose? Yeah, what do you get?
Idiots. Just idiots. I don't know. It's puzzled. It's endless puzzlement. I don't know. You're tempted to say, oh, that's just a teenager, but it's not. Often it's a grown human with a day job and everything.
And it doesn't say anything about mankind, and it doesn't really say anything about Zoom. It doesn't say anything about the internet. It says something about one idiot.
Yeah, it's not even clever or interesting. It's just dumb.
You know what Alfred said?
Alfred E. Newman?
No, Alfred the Butler.
What did Alfred the Butler
say?
In
Batman Begins, I think. Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yes. Perfect line. In fact, I think I could make a meme out of that.
Well done. Well done.
Some people. Google now warns you if your search terms aren't going to get you great results. So Google will now alert you if there aren't any good results for your search terms. I would really like to trigger this, but I don't know how. It will also offer, because my terms are always so good, it will also offer tips on helping you reformulate your terms. It'll be rolling out in the U.S. first.
I think I could find this insulting.
Well, here's the example Google gave. Let's see what happens. Minus Liberty. B plus or minus square root BM. And it did give me a result. So maybe it hasn't rolled out yet.
That was their example?
That was the example. Here's what it was supposed to do. It looks like there aren't any great matches for your search. Try using words that might appear on the page you're looking for. For example, cake recipes. Sure. Somebody types minus B plus or minus square root.
They want a cake recipe.
They want a cake recipe.
What they're looking for is a cake recipe, obviously.
Oh, you know, what they're looking for is the answer to their homework problems is what they're looking for.
Yeah.
So it hasn't rolled out to me, but kids, if you're typing in homework questions, Google might help you if you do it just right. Google kills. Are you ready? I'm ready to shed a tear. Anytime I see a sentence begin, Google kills. What'll it kill next? What's on the Google chopping block? Oh, no. Shoelace.
Do you even know what the hell
literally
shoelace
never
was?
Heard of it.
No.
Literally
I've never heard of it. Never.
But I do like business. Charlie Wood's choice of this particular picture of Sundar Pichai meditatively squeezing his lower lip in probably some sadness over having to pull the shoelace.
And he's thinking to himself, what is shoelace? I've never heard of that.
That is.
I'm trying to remember back. Was that back in 86?
Shoe leather? What?
What? Shoe? What? What could it possibly have been? What would a shoelace indicate?
This is clearly what you would get if you
bring people together.
Bring people together.
People with common interests.
Yes. Yes.
Like two laces on a shoe.
Oh, cute.
I got it. You're going to use your shoelace to tie your hands down so you don't touch your face like that.
I think this is the picture you get if you search on the clip art sites for the word pensive. You get this if you know. This is
it's not April 1st, is it?
No.
Okay.
No.
So this was a real thing.
Neither of you had heard of it either. I put that in there.
Never.
Neither of you had heard of it, right?
And here's the quote. Nope. I love it. Given the current health crisis, we don't feel like now is the right time to invest further in this project.
That no one has heard of.
we're done. Here's the FAQ, the shoelace deprecation FAQ. By the way, a lot of people reading it right now. There's a kangaroo and a wolverine and a hippo.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is shoelace being shut down?
Because no one knew what the hell it was.
We're proud of the work we accomplished. Will you reboot Shoelace once mandated social distancing is ended? No, we won't.
No, just go away.
No, go away. May 12th, your Shoelace account will be deleted. I want to, don't you?
Oh,
wanna,
no.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
I want to know how many user accounts there were.
Is it shoelace.google.com?
Can you download your account?
You can, I think, yeah.
Oh, I feel...
your shoelaces.
You know who I feel bad for is the poor person who really... They probably... This was their...
baby.
This is their baby.
Okay, so here's the story. Here's the headline. July 12, 2019. Google takes another run at social networking with shoelace.
Wow. They're running away from it now. Can I save my data? I
mean, it's a terrible metaphor.
If you fill out a form.
The whole shoelace thing just doesn't work.
Here's the form you have to fill out, a shoelace data export request.
Oh, Jesus. This is a joke. This is an elaborate prank.
I can't even get to it.
On the Verge story, there's a picture of a guy with too big a smile.
Oh, here it is.
I just moved to the neighborhood with my beagle mix, Max. Any dog owners around want to meet up today?
Jeff, it was for New York. That's why.
It was New York. It was invitation only for New York.
Yeah.
That's why no one's ever heard
this of is,
it.
These guys are laughing.
Someone just described
it. Google did what? Shoelace? Like,
what? What?
Google said what? Shoelace is not a social network. Nope. It's a movement. To celebrate the people and places that make New York City great. And look how they're...
If you have to start off with it's not a social network, I feel like you are on the wrong...
All they really did was make a really great web page. Find and join activities near you.
If no,
you
I want to join.
So it was like Foursquare? Yeah. Was it sort of Foursquare-like, I wonder? Maybe.
Download the app. Go ahead, Leo.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's do it.
Do it.
Let's do it. Shoelace, hang with others.
Rediscover.
Oh, it's on the iPhone and the iPad. Now, you know what? Huh? Shouldn't there be like, I would bet there are people, you know how people, there are people collect, you know, old bits of technology and try to, you know, get them working again.
Mm-hmm.
There should be some way that you can collect old apps like this because this is going to just disappear like it never existed. All the bits will go back.
There'll be another one.
Yeah, here it is. I'm downloading it. There'll be another one. Hang with others IRL. That's the tagline. Mm-hmm.
All the kids say that.
Oh,
so much for that.
This is like an event. That's why it's not.
Oh, it's like actually get together
with
people.
That's why it's dead now. No one's using it. Yeah. Well, no, it's not like Foursquare. It's saying, oh, you like skating? I like music. Let's all get together.
Ooh.
Currently trend.
Mr. Goodbar, I think.
Sign in with Google. I don't actually have to sign in, do I? You know who I am. Do you know who I am? It says unable to sign in anyway. So, Shoelace is built by Area 120, which is their research thing. So this is an experiment. Yeah, but an ill-timed experiment because, of course, no one's getting together. So, bye-bye, Shoelace. Just gonna untie that one. Finally, Waze is finally testing lane guidance for navigation. So, Elon Musk's Tesla has shipped out a thing that knows stop signs, red lights, can drive you all the way. Waze, trying to keep up, is going to show you which lane you should be in if you're going to exit here.
Which is handy.
Yeah, but doesn't everybody else do that? Stay in the second lane from the left. Things like that.
It helps that it's in Hebrew.
Yeah, apparently only in Israel will you be able to use this. I don't even know what we're looking at. This lane guidance for Waze is starting in Israel. But it will work much like the navigation feature in Google Maps. A heads up to change lanes while traveling on a multi-lane road. Yeah, that's nice. You want that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is pretty amazing how Google has left Waze in Israel and alone to develop on their own.
Right. Good.
Yeah.
That's where they're based? Where it's based?
But they share data, right?
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. They absolutely do. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They didn't at first, though.
No, they didn't at first.
And the reason Waze didn't do it, according to a Reddit post by a Waze map editor, is they were worried it would be distracting. The voice is sufficient. They didn't want to show too much because it would distract.
All right, here's a test. Here's a test. When you use any of you, the apps, do you do voice or visual or both?
I don't remember. Not a hard driving question. What was it like driving? when you were a kid.
Yeah, I know.
When you were a kid, and you did you get in the car and drive places, Daddy? I use both, but my car's nav will show it on the screen in front of me, as well as the voice.
I hate the voice. Don't do the voice. My wife will only do the voice.
Yeah, I hate both. The voice.
Yeah, the voice, it's too late usually when the voice tells you. I need to kind of get more advanced information. Your wife won't look at the screen. She'll only listen.
Pretty much.
Huh.
Matthew?
So my wife and I have a thing where she turns on Waze and the voice and then also gives me other directions at the same time.
Because it's fun to boss you around. Did she argue with it? Did she disagree with Waze?
Oh, yeah. Did you see the tweet from, I can't remember who it was, but they said, we have a fun game my wife and I played during COVID. It's called Why Do You Do It That Way? And there are no winners.
How long have you been married?
37 years.
See, I'm just glad to hear that you can be married 37 years and still have those conversations. That's encouraging. Why do you do it that way? Early on, Lisa and I would fight over which way the silverware should go in the dishwasher, with fork tines up or handle up, right? Why do you do it that way?
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't remember anymore because she won. So whatever way she wanted to do it is the way we do it.
End you use goes up, obviously. Everybody knows that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I was mistakenly of the end you use goes down. Persuasion.
Because you want it when you empty it, you want to take it by the handle.
I want to take it by the handle. I don't want to touch the tines.
Right.
But now that we're all...
It does make that harder.
Yeah. Now that we're all sanitized, I guess if the forks are up, if the tines are up, it washes better.
Yes.
That's the theory, but I mean, honestly, it washes just fine either way. I'll be honest. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Then the other thing we fight, and I also... I mean, I lost them all, but I don't putting pots...
The toilet paper roll?
No. Nobody disagrees over that. It's always got over it over the top. And then there's who thinks it goes under the bottom? No one.
So my daughter had a counter argument, which is very powerful. If you have a pet, like say a cat, if it's over the front, the top, then your pet can basically unroll the whole thing by swiping it. Whereas if it's over the back, it's harder for them to do that.
Oh, very good.
I had to admit that made
sense.
That's
a good argument.
That's a good one. Is that from experience or theory?
Yes. No. Real life experience.
Oh, that is a good theory. I like it. And that, my friends, is the Google changelog. Plus a little life lore from Matthew Ingram. I'm glad you could be here. We miss Stacy. She'll be back next week, but I'm glad, Matthew, you could be here. She was a little angry with me last week. Did you hear that?
Uh-oh.
No, she was mad because we were looking at some sourdough starter, and I said, that is a mighty fine-looking starter. And she thought I was talking about the woman who created it, not the starter.
Oh, geez.
And she really wanted to punch me. But fortunately, all was explained. It was a comma blunder.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. remember that, Jeff? We were looking. A woman had built a Twilio. An employee had built a lid that you put on your starter.
Oh,
and
cool.
It measures its humidity and an expansion, so you have always this feedback.
Wow.
Yeah, and it used the cell network and everything. It was a really clever idea.
That would
idea.
Be handy.
And
my daughter was making some.
Admittedly, she had some mighty fine-looking starter. I'm just saying.
Do you know the oldest known starter?
No, how old is it? Is it the Boudin starter in San Francisco?
I'm putting it in right now.
Is it as old as the Boudin starter?
Under other...
Because
According to a local story, it's a classic Newcastle woman maintained. I don't know if you're old or not.
That's pretty old, but I think the sourdough.
122-year-old starter, but it's not the older.
It's not the oldest. That's typical of Newcastle, wherever that might be. Is that in New Jersey?
I doubt it.
It's the Star Tribune.
Maybe here's a Guardian story. Rising fame. Experts herald Canadian woman's 120-year-old starter.
I'm going to type in oldest sourdough.
San Francisco Boudin is 160.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
It's 160.
You know,
there's
what?
A guy who has a sourdough starter museum.
This frustrates me.
Yeah, we had that on the show. Yeah.
This is an example of Google really making a mess of the news. What do we find if I search oldest sourdough starter, Lucille, and her 120-year-old starter? Right under it, the 160-year-old starter. But then right under that, man makes sourdough from a 4,500-year-old Egyptian yeast.
Does that count?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sour is sour.
He made it in the traditional way, too.
It's Egyptian sourdough.
He said it was a little chewy.
You can, if you make sourdough, roll it. You can put it in a paste on a silicone piece of paper, roll it, flatten it, roll it, and dry it, and it'll be just, it's yeast. It's just like any other yeast. So that's probably what the Egyptians did. And he made some bread from it. Truthfully,
amazing stuff.
I don't. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've discovered now what to do with sourdough discard. I want to share this with everybody because it's.
Yeah. What do you do?
It was a life changing revelation to me, thanks to my friends at King Arthur Flour. So anybody who's made sourdough knows that you have to feed it, right? Because it's a living organism, so you give it fresh flour and water every single day. And if you think about it, that means it gets bigger. And you have a lot of extra sourdough every day, like a cup or two. And for the longest time, for years, I've been throwing it out. Like, what do you do with this? Well, it turns out you do a lot of wonderful things, but there is nothing better than King Arthur Flour's sourdough discard crumpets.
Ooh. Okay.
Oh, my God. I am going to gain 1,000 pounds because... This takes no time. You take a cup of sourdough starter, a pinch of salt, a teaspoon of sugar, and the key ingredient, 3/8 of a teaspoon of baking soda. That's what makes the little bubbles. I had no idea. Yep. You mix it all together. You heat your griddle on medium-low heat. You pour it out. Now, you're better off if you've got those rings, which I got. I actually ordered on Amazon. I ordered little crumpet rings, and you pour them into the ring, 1 inch high and 4 inches across. And you cook them 5 minutes on one side, flip them, cook them 3 minutes on the other side until they're golden brown. It's the best crumpets you've ever had in your life. And the problem is it makes four. I eat them all immediately.
Oh, warm. Yeah. Oh,
I like a good
little,
crumpet.
Little clotted cream.
Oh,
and,
my God. That's the next thing. I got to make clotted cream.
What is clotted cream? How do you make clotted cream?
You take cream and you...
It's just really thick cream.
Cook it in a double boiler for a long time. It's not worth it.
Really?
Oh, it is worth it.
Plus, it'll kill
actually,
you.
It is
right?
worth it. Well, the crumpets are going to kill me. The cream will just make it make it go down easier. Okay, I made these last night. I made these this morning. I get a cup of sourdough discard every single day. It's crumpets forever.
I can't let it go to waste. Sourdough pretzels. Did I see that there?
Oh yeah. Oh, this is good.
That'd be good.
By the way, this is my pick of the week. I'm going to just give it to you right now, King. Okay. Flour, Arthur Flour, sourdough discard recipes. Mm. It's a whole page. By the way, I've made the classic sourdough waffles, best waffles you've ever had in your entire life. I use
sourdough cinnamon buns are pretty good.
Sourdough cinnamon buns, sourdough pretzels, chocolate cake.
You know, by the way, I found this out from my father.
Yeah,
trying to order his orders on Instacart.
Yeah,
there appears to be a nationwide shortage of wheat thins.
Really?
You could probably make sourdough wheat thins at home.
No, it's, he won't please.
The reason you do sourdough starters is because nobody can get yeast. There is a shortage of yeast,
That's
but
right.
you don't need yeast.
That's right.
You got your own sourdough.
I didn't know. So we tried to make it here, and it didn't work that well. And I didn't realize that you're basically trying to encourage yeast out of the air.
Yeah, it's coming from
wherever
the
you are.
Yeah, there's yeast everywhere.
And so
it's also
depending
on
where you are... Right, but depending on where you are, the humidity, the sort of local environment,
it. It's perfect here because we're in wine country. There's yeast floating through the air all the time.
So it depends on where you are that it can even change the flavor.
Oh yeah, yeah. The terroir, of sourdough is very, very distinct.
Everybody is a sourdough expert now.
I know.
My whole Instagram feed is like it's basically baking. It's like 100% baking.
We're going to get out of this. The COVID don't kill you. The cholesterol will.
COVID-19, they call it.
Oh, this is the COVID-19. I got it right here. Do you want to share a thing or a pick, Mr. Matthew Ingram?
So this was one in the rundown, I guess, which I love for sort of a weird reason. I love the Boston Dynamics Spot.
Oh, the dog.
Robot.
Yeah.
So they're trying to kind of make them useful for telemedicine, I guess. So yeah. They
a little less scary, yeah.
So you have this sort of frightening headless dog thing, and then you have an iPad with your coworker's face on it. Yeah. And so this looks to me like something you would see in the game Half-Life.
Yeah. Yeah, coming for you.
Rants,
yeah.
And this is going into the rooms of people who have fevers and delirium, exactly. Seriously.
Oh, my God.
I think it's a winner. It's 100%.
I'm your doctor. Does it make the sound? Let me see. I gotta hear the sound because I love the... Oh, see, they didn't put a video in here. TechCrunch needs a video. Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's definitely...
Hello, future. I'm your doctor.
Hi, I'm Spot.
Lemma, come over and visit you.
And all they have to do is hook Spot up with like a syringe, maybe, injection mechanism, maybe some, you know...
That's what it needs. It just needs a needle. Mm-hmm. By the way, a little sourdough tip for you, Mr. Matthew Ingram, rye flour. The rye has some very nice yeasts. If your sourdough is lagging or seems a little tired, rye flour will pick it right up. And it doesn't change the flavor a lot. I only make mine from hand ground, stone ground, spelt berries. Course, yes. And it's fabulous. Everything I do is whole wheat. I don't use that white flour. It's all whole wheat.
Okay.
That's why it's okay if I eat four crumpets a day.
4 pounds of it.
Yeah, a day, every single day for the rest of my life, which won't be very long. Jeff Jarvis, number of the week.
Oh, we got a few choices here. Let me just ask you this. Have you seen the dog derby, the guy who, the sports commentator who does his dogs?
Yeah. I love it.
Have you seen
it.
The rematch?
No. Is there a new one?
Are we allowed to play this? Or are we going to get in trouble?
Oh, I don't care what Carson says. He's a Harvard man. Let's listen and watch.
You need the sound.
So into the final minute and all of in possession. But this is where Mabel is strong.
So I should explain. You got a black lab and a golden lab sitting next to each other, looking at each other. The black lab has an orange dog bone in its mouth. He's in possession.
Sing the game. Using that intensity, we saw it in the semi-final, staring at a slightly torn cloth rabbit for over 7.5 minutes. And perhaps a few signs of overconfidence from her rival, a bit of showboating. Has to be careful. And there's the change from the classic hold, still placed on the outside, though great technique. And a glance at the youngster who shows little emotion, but her mind will be empty. 20 seconds to go now. Olive closing in on victory and that coveted prize of being told she's a very good dog. One paw to control and a switch. Now Mabel sensing this might be a chance. Still waiting. Still believing. And you wonder what Olive is doing here. Only has to hold on. Going to the upright though. High tariff with no opposable thumbs. High risk at this stage. And it's gone and Mabel takes it. No mercy from the younger dog. He takes this victory just as time runs out. A famous win built on mercy. Patience and sheer belief. For Olive, only thoughts of what might have been, but only herself to blame. She's given this one away, and that will hurt most of all.
Oh, Bad my dog. God, that's freaking brilliant.
Isn't that brilliant? Isn't
Andrew
that just
Cotter,
great?
Mr. Andrew Cotter, Cotter on the Twitter.
He has a new one up while he's waiting for a rematch. There's a new one up on his Twitter feed of them doing synchronous swimming. But if you want to watch that one too,
this is incredible. Brilliant. I have to say,
Leon eating 3 kilos of grass and upsetting a small child, but Mabel finishing so strongly here, taking herself off to stand in this fetid pond just to please herself. It's not even that warm today. Just standing, letting all the unpleasantness soak in. And this might well have shaken Olive, wondering now if she needs to go back and roll in that very poorly squirrel in the trees, which got her shouted at a few moments ago. But she might have to try something because Mabel is piling on the pressure here, doing nothing at all, and that's the beauty of it. Come on, out you get. There we are. No recognition, no recall whatsoever. A stare that says, I'm doing what I want, and I have zero respect for you. I think there might be a move by Olive, a response to this effort by the youngster. Yes, there it is, joining a rival again. Absolutely no purpose to it. Not fetching anything, just wandering round. Synchronized spin. A nice touch.
Just wandering around.
Now both of them wondering how to finish this off. Well, no point in shaking yet, you're still in the water. So there's the hop, beautifully done. And there we are, shaking all over my jeans. Even Olive enjoyed that one. She knows that she can still take it by shaking over the furniture back at home. Apology doesn't even mean it.
Oh, so what does this guy do? Is he
he's a sports? Yeah, he's a sportscaster. He just poured tears.
Oh, but he's so good,
isn't he? You saw the original one?
Yes, we played
the original
one.
They're eating.
Yeah. It's so, really well. And even before that, he was doing people waiting at a bus shelter, and he's really great. I think this is. Was he a golf commentator? Is it cricket? What is it?
I think it was golf. I think it was golf because he had a funny one in his feed about a Venn diagram of people who are here for boring golf things and people who are here for the dogs, and there's no overlap.
Oh, there he is. And it's not really what you'd expect him to look like. Andrew Cotter, Mr. Andrew Cotter, broadcasting, hosting, writing. And Andrew, you have a standing invitation to join us. On the show, and anytime do a play-by-play. He's in the UK. That is
so two dogs. That's the number.
That is really an example of how the world has so dramatically changed. No sports, so we're watching dogs. That's really great.
What are bettors doing?
Oh God!
So when I was at the Daily News in New York, we had this horrible. Racist little cartoon, like Ching Chow it was called. There was little Chinaman. It was awful.
Oh,
it was awful.
My God.
Is it there, right? Wow. And it was in the sports section, and we went on strike, and we ran out of space, and we ran out of money, so we got rid of it. Oh, my God. There was a problem because the people who played the numbers used it. They would count the hairs on Ching Chow's head.
That's the thing.
Like
bettors
that.
Can bet on anything.
Exactly.
So anything. I suspect there are bettors betting even on this show. Like how long it will be. The over-under is a minute,
for
1 hour,
moral panic.
48 minutes. Will moral panic be mentioned? Will Gutenberg be mentioned?
Gutenberg.
Both this week. Thank you, Matthew, for filling in. Great to see you. He is a digital writer, which means he uses his fingers, as many do, for the Columbia Journalism Review, CJR.org. Joins us each week. No, not every week, but as many weeks as we can get him. Thank you, Matthew. Stay well with your lambs. They're beautiful. And your fam.
Well,
enjoy your crumpets. And we'll see you later. Thank you, Matthew. Jeff Jarvis, the Craig Knight Professor of Graduate Professor of School of Journalism.
Craig's watching, you know. Craig,
I love you, Craig. Craig Newmark, School of Natural History. Oh, all right. Wait, let me see if I can do this right. Jeff Jarvis is... The Craig Newmark Professor of Journalism at the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
He got much bigger fish than me. The school's named after him, not just me.
Yeah. The Jeff Jarvis School of Journalism. Someday it should be. Thank you, Jeff. Follow him on the Twitter at Jeff Jarvis. He writes at BuzzMachine.com. Are you working on a book right now?
Mm-hmm. What's your trying book? To? But I'm Gutenberg. But
is it hard to work on a book when nothing's going on?
It's really hard because I try to get from COVID brain to Gutenberg brain. Mm-hmm. It's really impossible. And I thought
we do.
You know Pete Dominic? Have you ever run across Pete Dominic? Mm-hmm. Wonderful guy, podcaster now, radio guy,
sounds
comedy.
Familiar.
And he was just saying so many people are learning how much the commute has been rotting their body and soul. And I was about to tweet to him. That, yeah, I thought that giving up my 3-hour-plus commute a day, I'd have the book written by now.
Yeah, you'd think. No. Like, we'd have all this time.
No.
Nope.
And I'm listening to fewer books, too.
Yeah. Mostly I just sit staring into space, wondering when my hair will stop growing.
and being envious of Matthew's beard.
And very, very envious of Matthew's beard.
You don't even trim it? That's just obnoxious.
I mean... A little bit when there's bits sticking out.
But it just does that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, eventually it's going to get longer and longer, right?
Well, it's going to be. Well, when Matthew originally put it up, I immediately put up a picture of David Letterman, of course.
It's not a Letterman beard. It's a beautiful beard. It's shapely. It's got a nice tone and
Letterman's
to
got
it.
A good. He's got a.
He looks like
a good like
crazy old man on the porch. Yeah,
Virginia. Yeah, yeah, sitting on the porch.
Yeah,
beard. Well, that's a style of beard. You know,
it's a style indeed. Yeah. I don't mind not having a beard. I'm thinking though that the Stokowski hair. I don't know. We're gonna work on it.
Leopold.
It is distinctly different this week. Yeah, it's gone over
something's
a line.
Something's happened. It's gone over a line.
I've got mine is getting very long.
I have Sweeney Todd hair. It's great. It's great.
Two on the sides and three on top.
Two on the sides and three on top. Oh, the buzz of the number of the razor.
Ah. So that's the thing. So if I've got the beard trimmer, it goes from, you know, 1 to 14, I guess, millimeters or something, right? And if I used it, how bad could that be?
No, it'll look great.
I mean, it grows back, right?
Steve Gibson's girlfriend.
Sure. How bad could it be?
Steve Gibson's girlfriend uses, I think, a 0 on him. No, wow, zero would be nothing, right? Zero would be nothing. Bald. Yeah, so it's a 1 or 2. It's a little bit short. It's closely cropped. It's very military. It looks good. He looks like a... Yeah. Lieutenant
two on
Colonel.
The sides, three on top.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific time in the afternoon. That's 4:30 Eastern. That's 20:30 UTC. You can stop by and watch us live or listen live at twit.tv/live. You can even ask your Amazon Echo. You say, Echo, play Twit live on TuneIn, and it will start playing whatever's going on. And there's always something going on here. In fact, Friday, it's going to be the great Twit Cook-Off. Mary Jo Foley will be a judge. Many of our hosts will be cooking. I am emeritus. I don't need to prove anything. I'm just going to sit back and watch.
You have a machine that helps you cheat.
I have a cheating machine. That's exactly right. In fact, I'm going to make pea soup in my cheating machine tonight. It's very exciting for me. It's an exciting moment. But do watch that. It'll be 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. On Friday at twit.tv/live. Also on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit. All the shows are there. All the shows also on the website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, it's twit.tv/twig. We would love it if you subscribed. That way you'll get it automatically downloaded to your device of choice, and you can listen whenever you're in the mood. And we just think that's the right way to listen. On behalf of Jeff and Matthew, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.